Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Relationship Marketing 101. Directions University at directionsu.com delivers passion-powered results for your life and business so that you can live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello and welcome to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 Radio. Today this is Rhonda Del Baggio, the story lady, and Gina will be around a little bit today. It's a bit different. We are on the road. And so, you know, that always changes things just a bit. And so we are going to have our fabulous show, and I'm sort of taking the reins, and she will be in for a little bit of the time and out for part of the time. So we have been in Atlanta, and we still are in Atlanta as of today, and we're both leaving for home and for today very soon. So right now I'm sitting in a hotel room over here and getting ready to get things going. So I'm getting her the phone number. So this has been a really amazing week, and we have been at the Everyday Online Entrepreneur event that's hosted by Nitro Marketing. So one thing that was really fantastic was, of course, part of it is meeting up with people that I don't get to see very often. And Gina Gaudio Graves is one of those people. I don't get to see her often. We're on the show every week. We're on calls every week of different types. But to actually be able to give each other a hug and meet heart to heart, smile to smile, is just fabulous. And we love that. And I've also had an opportunity to meet Jeffrey, one of her bachelor students, who drove down with her, and had an opportunity to meet Don Osborne, who has become part of our world, and I've talked to him countless times on phone calls and had a chance to actually meet him and reconnect with number one best-selling author Jason Omont, who is the author of Conversations with Millionaires. He's coming out with a new book sometime in the next couple months, so we got to see him. Devon Brown, the Success Renegade, who is just a dynamo, and all kinds of other great people, Dr. Michael Craig, for example. A lot of these people have been on our show before, Mike Wesley. So it has been a really fabulous time to reconnect, to meet, of course, new people, and to help people to live the life of their dreams by building a business. And so today, our guest, and I've got your line open now, Bob, today we have an amazing guest, and I am so incredibly excited. I am just thrilled, Bob, to get you here. You're laughing. I love it. I love it. This is so great. Oh, my gosh. You know, because, see, everything's about relationships. And your story, I told several people, Bob, at this event today, just the little, you know, the very Reader's Digest condensed version, like in a couple sentences about what you are doing with this movie. And they're like, oh, my God. They wrote it down. They're going to go get it. I mean, it's just because they were really excited by the fact that you are somebody who said, no, I don't want to be, you know, edgy in the rat race and do all this the way that y'all think we should. I want to do this in a way that is inspiring. And so we'll talk much more about that, and I'll fill in the details really soon here, Bob. But I just am wanted to let you know that your story is starting to spread around amongst the entrepreneurs that we hang with, and they're going, ooh, a guy after our own heart. That's just fabulous. So I'm sure we'll have a few other conversations about some different things.
That's wonderful.
So let me give you a little proper introduction as we go along here. And who we have here, folks, is Bob Krantz. Now, we bring all kinds of different people to you on this radio show. We have had really multi-best-selling authors. We've had people in business. We've had occasionally, now you are the second person that I know of anyway who is also an actor. We had Mike Mieske on a few weeks ago, and then of course yourself. But I think this may be that you may be the first movie producer that we have on our show. And so what this can show to people, and in case anybody's going, well, what does this have to do with business? You know what? Relationship marketing crosses all business types, online, offline, hybrid, both different industries. There is no one industry that can claim this, and that business really is being done by building relationships, kind of the way it was done back in the age of our great-grandparents and perhaps grandparents, to where the people, you go to who you knew, you go to who was around you, and who you knew would give you a great service, and you weren't going around price shopping and things like that. So it's very exciting to have you here, and I love having people from these different industries that don't openly appear to be business-related, but of course it is business like anything else. So the interesting things about you, though there are many, and you have a book that's coming out, and we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. But one of the very interesting things about you is that you have this, been in around the Hollywood scene. And Hollywood scenes can be pretty cutthroat, right?
That's true. Very true.
Yeah. So very, very cutthroat. I mean, a lot of places can be, but Hollywood certainly. And there is this sense of that certain people want to dictate what should happen, what should be the truth of how media is presented, how movies are presented, and so forth. And one of the things I found the most interesting about you is that you were getting feedback that people wanted edgy, and there's all these shows where they're very edgy, they're very high tension, movies and TV shows and things going in that same direction, and everything is like every 2 seconds you're flipping somewhere else,
right,
and back and forth and up and down, and oh, it's just exhausting. So
right.
Why would you want to put yourself in that? So what you said is, you know, you just couldn't find it in your heart to do the edgy thing, did you?
I couldn't. You know, I grew up, my favorite movie then, now, and probably forever will be It's a Wonderful Life. And it's not, you know, I think it was about 10 years ago, I was watching TV one day, and I noticed that the camera had been set up, and they were filming, and the camera was shaking and moving. And I thought, what in the world are they doing? And that became the new edgy way to photograph things. The camera was always moving, and I thought, that used to be a retake when I started. That would be like, hey, somebody bumped the camera, you know?
It's usually called drink less coffee, dude, right?
Yeah,
now,
right. So they were...
Too much caffeine, bud.
It was constantly trying to find a way to make it edgier and grittier, and I thought, if you go back and look at It's a Wonderful Life, that's edgy and gritty in its own way. You know, there's a wonderful scene in there when George Bailey is praying, and it's a tight, tight close-up on his face, and you can see tears forming in his eyes. And that's just called great acting, and it's a great storyline. But you don't
How
need
do
all
not
that
have
other... Yeah, you don't need all of that other... And my favorite part about that particular part of the movie is... Right after that prayer, you'll notice that that guy comes in and goes, are you George Bailey? And punches him. And you go, what a great... When you wrote that screenplay, you go, you know, what an interesting way to have that scene play out, which is he just prayed and then he gets punched. But I think like life, that's what happens in life. You oftentimes you pray and you get punched and then you come back and in the end everything makes sense, hopefully.
Right.
But yeah, I just think they're making these things... For the sake of, I think when Do You Want to Dance came out, there was a movie that came out called 10 Things I Hate About You. And I just thought, I don't know, you know, when you have kids and you have a family and you look back, are you really going to be proud of that, a movie called 10 Things I Hate About You? I don't know. I mean, if it wasn't for me. I mean, I just thought, you know, give me one second. I'll say one quick note. When we were down, we had won a film festival in Florida. And on the way back to the airport, I was with the 10, 12 other filmmakers that had competed. And, you know, we'd become friends and so forth. And as we were driving, I said to them, somebody said to me, boy, you know, I saw your movie. I really loved it. And he said, you know, the thing that was great, there was no swearing in it. And he said, did you do that on purpose? And I said, yeah. I said, you know, I figured someday I'm going to have kids, and I want this to go to a wide audience and so forth. And I said, why? What about you? He said, when we wrote it, we just wrote, you know, all the swearing in it. And I said, did it bother you? He goes, do you know what it's like to hear a movie over and over and over again with all that swearing? Every time I go to a festival, I have to hear that over and over again. And all of the other filmmakers said the same thing. They said, if I had to do it over again, I would take it all out. It's just, it does nothing to help the screenplay. It sounds good when you're writing it, but it's, in the end, it's not.
Yeah. I experienced recently a speaker from the stage who was leading a workshop. And, you know, it wasn't constant, certainly, but it definitely was there. So, and it's just, I found it very jarring to hear that from a stage.
Yeah.
And if there were no children in the room, but, you know, even still, I just find that there is not any particular value or necessity for that type of thing to be going on.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I can imagine, and imagine being the editors who are dealing with these miles and miles, or so to speak, of footage of different things that they're going through, and they're making their director's cuts and whatever, and they're hearing all this sleep all the time. I mean, it's just, it's not a great a great space to be in.
Usually I find it's covering something up. But usually it's covering up a lack of a storyline. So that's what we try to do with You Want to Dance.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like if you can't be inventive enough and sincere enough to create a real story.
Throw some swear words in and see what happens.
You see it cuss a bunch and see what happens, right?
Yeah, I'm not for that.
So, yeah. But, so that's a very interesting type of thing, is that level of edginess and so forth can really get to you. And so what you've decided to do is say, so I'm surrounded in all of this edginess and all of this cussing and all of this, I call it forced angst a lot of times. I mean, there's enough real, dear, deep emotion in life and struggle and whatever that happens just in the, you know, raw living of life. But this is the type of tribe, and all this is on there. And you got to a point where you were thinking about giving the whole thing up, right?
Yeah, for me, what they would do is, I had sold, I think, 4 or 5 screenplays to the studios, and Warner Brothers and 20th Century Fox and Columbia and so forth. And it was so frustrating that you would come in and everyone, oh, my God, this is great. And we would have, you know, we'd go on location scouts and then meetings with Michael Douglas and other producers and so forth that made Terminator and all this sort of stuff. And everyone was so excited about it. Oh, man, we're, you know, and they were paying me, too. They were paying me a lot of money. And then all of a sudden we'd get to the end, and there was no joke. I remember one day I came into with one of the studios, and we were on our final draft, and we had Kevin Bacon was going to play the lead actor and so forth. I was going to co-star in it and wrote it and produced it and all that sort of stuff. And I remember we came in, and the producer was sitting across, the studio was sitting across the chair from me, and he said, well, we're going to bring in another writer just to tweak it a little bit. And we came back a week later, and they had rewritten the entire script. And we kept saying, why did they do this? This was just... And it turned out behind his desk, there was a balloon, and it said he had just been to Die Hard. Die Hard had just come out. And this is the way Hollywood thinks is, well, you know what? I think that's going to be a hit. So let's take your script and make it into Die Hard. And Kevin, to his credit, said, no way, I'm not doing that. And those experiences, seeing things flounder, get screwed up, pursuing some type of fad, it was so frustrating because it went into what they call development hell. And that's where, and at one point I finally said, you know what? First of all, I'm Greek. And Greeks tend to like to be in charge of their own destiny, you know? And there's
it's
a lot
kind of part of the culture.
It is. You know, Greeks, the mottos are, you know, own, don't rent, work for yourself, and all that. You know, that's the way I was brought up. And I thought, I don't want to go through this anymore. I want to be the master of my own destiny as much as I can. And so we went off and I said, let's raise the money for Do You Want to Dance? And by hook and by crook, and as I was making the movie, we were raising the money. I would come home from writing and producing and acting in the film. We'd come home, and there'd be more people saying, okay, I want to invest in the movie. And it was crazy. But I knew what we were saying would have – it's like if you're going to pick a stock, you want to pick a stock that has long-term value versus something that looks like a fad. I knew what we were saying had long-term value. about love
mm-hmm.
and friendship and God and faith and love and dying and all those things. And so, and pursuing your dreams, those were the core
yeah.
issues
oh,
of what
I
wrote
love
about.
It.
So that was, that's what we were writing about, and that's when I finally said, let's go make it ourselves.
Right.
And that's what
well,
we did.
Well, I want to draw a couple of parallels for our audience here in regarding to starting a business, which is what a lot of our folks are doing. And definitely like yourself, like the Greek culture, where you're typically wanting to be in charge of your own destiny. That's what the people that listen to this show are all into. They're not filmmakers, but they're into it from having their own business. And so parallel I want to draw is this, is that there are so many people who decide, okay, I'm going to build my business using the power of the Internet. And they say, okay, fine. Oh, now the new fad. Okay, this month someone puts out a big thing about doing things on Facebook. So now we're going to go Facebook. And the next month is this big traffic. And now we're going to do traffic. And they go like, I call it tail chasing. You know how
yeah.
a dog will run around, run
right,
and chase
right.
their tail. That's what a lot of times people do because they go by the fad of the month. Instead of building strategically and building around message and building around purpose.
Yeah.
The way
that
the way that Gina Gaudio-Graves is, the main host of Directions University, the host of the show and the dean and founder of Directions University, the way that she and I build businesses and the way that you decided to go with your movie was we don't follow the trends and the fads, but build, or the trads, as I was about to say.
Yeah.
I like that, trads. Yeah. I like to make up words. But anyway, not to follow all of that, but to truly build strategically from a place of heart, from a place of purpose. That's what you did with the movie. You found the funding. You scrambled. I mean, and just like so many people, you're off making the movie going, I wonder how we're going to get this thing funded. And you come home, and oh, okay, there's another person who's willing to put in. So you find little by little that you get to build it. So.
Here to point to what you were just talking about, that what happened when we finished the film, we screened it for the studios, and it was for Columbia and Paramount, for everyone that was interested in the movie. And then the night we screened the film, there were 600 people there, and this was it. This was like the night of my life. And
right.
what happened about 10 minutes into the movie, the sound started going out, and no one knew what in the world was happening. And what happened was I ran up into the booth. The light bulb that projects through the film was burning out, and there's nothing to do about it. And it was like seeing my life flash in front of me because we had everything. Everything was on the line. We had, I'd moved in. I just got married. I'd moved in with my mom. We had put every penny into this movie, and in
right.
1 hour, it just went down the drain. And the studios thought that it was made poorly because the sound kept going in and out. They eventually
okay.
switched the light bulb on the fly, but half the movie was over. And at one point after that, everyone started passing on it, and there was one company that called us up and said, we're thinking about it. And I remember praying at the time saying, God, if they pass on it, I got to move on because I put so much of my life into this. And
right.
they ended up saying yes, and they took it to Cannes, and
mm-hmm.
they ended up buying the foreign rights to it. And then they came back to America, and they said, okay, we're going to package this with a Val Kilmer and a Julie Roberts film and all this, and we're going to give it to Columbia. And this is what I was going to point to, what you were just talking about. My wife, I found out when we got back from Cannes, was pregnant with triplets. So
oh,
we had
my
no,
goodness.
We had no money. I had three kids on the way. I was living with my mom. We were actually in debt. And they were offering me to take my film to Columbia. And I called my friend Peter Nelson over there at the time. And I said, Peter, what are you guys going to do with this? He said, listen, we want these other films, and they're packaging it with yours. And we're going to come over here. We're not going to sell a whole lot of these things, but it'll look cool, and that's about it. And that's when I made a decision in my life that changed my life. I talked to my wife, and she was on complete bed rest. Had gained 60 pounds, so, we're having this conversation. I said, I think I should start my own company and distribute this myself. And everybody said to me, are you nuts? You've got to
right.
be crazy.
Of course.
Who are you going to sell this to? And by the way, there was no internet at that time. It was
mm-hmm.
just starting to take off. And
right.
I just, something told me, stick to your guns. And there was a, somebody had some type of event, and they invited me to, and they said, bring your movie. I said, but no one knows who I am. And I filled it with 20 videos that night. We sold it, and we got, it was like $400, which felt like $1 million to us. And I thought, you know what? If I fail, at least I'm going to fail on my own ground. I don't want to be calling Columbia every 20 minutes and, hey, do we sell anymore? What are you going to do? This way I can control my destiny, so to speak. And we then grew from that to now we send out about 325,000 catalogs a year. We were able to purchase our own buildings for our company. And it, but it started with that decision, which was made in, you know, at the lowest point, but that was the beginning of what turned everything around. So when you were talking about business, believe me, what I do every day is related to business, because you have
to know marketing.
You have to understand so much about what you're selling, how you're selling it, and if you don't, you're gonna you will lose.
Right, and you're definitely in business. You know, we just hadn't been talking about that piece of it yet, but you know, yeah. I mean, obviously, and especially with having your own company, doing your own distribution, and so. We talk all the time here about building business through relationships. And so here you are. And in the whole world, you know, talk about really just having the courage to go for it, because everyone's telling you that you're nuts. You know that you have three babies on the way and everything else.
Yeah.
And you're going for it, you know, right? So
yeah.
You're, you know, you're into, every logical person would probably tell you if they were not tied into purpose and dream, they would say, listen, dude, get a job, okay? A job, you get insurance. Hello, you're going to have three babies.
Yeah,
you know,
no
whatever.
Question. Starting with my in-laws.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, especially if it's our daughter you're talking about. You're supposed to take care of her right now. But they were just completely going crazy.
Oh, yeah, and I didn't blame them either. I'd be the same way. They think they were looking at me going, I remember he just said to me, okay, you sell it to your 12 friends. Then what are you going to do, you know? And I remember thinking, yeah, what am I going to do then? But you know, I remember what happened, what's made me convinced I was doing the right thing. We screened the film at a theater in Chicago, and none of those people knew me, knew who I was. And at the end, we got a standing ovation, and they didn't know I was there. And I stood up at the end, and I introduced myself, and I said to them, if I had this on video, would you buy it? And everyone raised their hand, wrote down their name and address. That's how my company began. I just went, okay, you know what? Those people didn't know me. They didn't have to be nice to me. They could have just left the theater, and I thought, this movie is speaking to them. And then we just got tons of email and letters from people saying how much this movie affected them. And similarly, you know, the book you mentioned that we're coming out with this week, Falling in Love with Sophia, gotten the same kind of response. So I know when you've got a product that affects people and really moves people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rare thing. It doesn't happen a whole lot. And it usually happens. I'm not the most prolific writer, producer, actor, author, because I spend a lot of time thinking and planning and preparing so that when I deliver something to an audience that I know it's deep and it's substantive and it's going to affect them on some level. That's what I'm trying for, at least.
Right. And that's really, you know, that's really critical. And so what you're really suggesting to people is, yes, you know, we're all going to have those naysayers, those people who say, you're going to be nuts, right? You know, we those of us who listen to this show, people get that kind of thing all the time as well. And so, and you had a whole lot financially, you had a whole lot emotionally and personally, you know, probably a lot of in-law strife and a lot of other kinds of strife. And you stayed clear and stayed true to that message. And you also, that something else that's very significant is I heard you say, raise your hands if you, we had this on video, would you buy it? And so you got feedback from the people, and they said, yeah, that is what we want. And so now you're able to deliver into people's hands something that they can not just see once in the theater and go, gosh, that was great, but really can take it home and give it for gifts and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, I think that like, also what I try and do so much is I try to, you know, if I had a strength that I could say, okay, this is, you know, maybe one of the few things that I feel I do really well, is I listen to people. I listen to what they're going through in their lives. I listen to what they say, hey, I wish you had this kind of product. I wish we, you know, interestingly enough, what we were talking about before, when Do You Want to Dance came out, there was one moment in that film where the priest turns back and tells the head of the president of the parish off, and he swore. He said, "Eat blank," and the audience just, wow, they just were roaring because they wanted. And as we were walking out, somebody said to me, it was actually my dad, he said, "You know what? I wish he would have found another way to have expressed himself."
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, hey, everybody was applauding. It was a huge moment. But I listened to that one voice, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to take it out. And it ended up being the best thing that I took it out. So I've always listened to what people are saying when you're marketing. Listen to people that are saying, you know, people joke, and they said, "Bob, I'll take out my book, and if the guy that's cleaning up the garbage is out there, hey, read this, tell me what you think of it. If we're editing a movie, I'll bring in three or four people that work in the grocery store I go to. Hey, come on, tell me what you think of this." That's what I always try and do, because I feel like that's the person my products are for. The average everyday person that's out there working 9 to 5, has kids, or is looking for a loved one, is divorced, that has lost a loved one. That's the person that I can relate to, and that's the person I'm writing for.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell people where they can go and see some info and to pick up Do You Want to Dance. So we've got to do that, first of all, and then we'll move onward. So there's a link you can go to that I'll give you right now. And if you go to, you'll see that it's in the show notes there. And if you're listening through iTunes or some other method, you can go to this link. It is going to be at www.asktsl. So that means ask, like ask a question, T like the, S like story, L like lady.com/dance. And what I have are, Bob, I have the reviews and some things up there, and of course the link to bring this home to you. And I'll tell you, it is just such a beautiful, inspiring. I watched it twice in a row. I mean, I literally went from the mailbox when I had ordered it. I got it. I had time that afternoon. I watched it with Kleenex and everything. I wanted to see it again, but I had to go have dinner with some friends, and they couldn't. I said, "Well, come over and we'll watch this." Well, they couldn't do that, but I went back and I watched it a second time the same night, and I thought, "Oh man, this is really beautiful." So I'm getting ready to order some for holiday gifts. Yeah, and there are just so many. Gosh, I mean, I could go on for the whole hour and a half about just things I love about this movie, but
thank you.
A couple of them being, you're most welcome. But a couple of them being that, of course, as somebody who's really dedicated to not only living my own dream. I mean, that's no fun if I don't bring a bunch of people along for the fun ride. It's really about following that guidance that you get despite everything, and when you feel like maybe it's all crumbling around you, and yet that there is still hope. And that's such a beautiful message for these times that we live in.
Yeah, and that's something. You know, there's a moment in that movie that where I go to see the priest and I hand him the keys, and he says, "What's this?" And it was when I shot it. I remember it affected me. I remember during one of the breaks in it getting choked up. Because I remember I said one of the lines was, "There's a time to dream, and then there's a time where you have to face reality and move on." And my college movie, it was a horrible movie that they made at USC, but it was called Hold On to Your Dream. And I've always loved, you know, when I watched the biopic on Ray Charles, there was a moment there where, you know, everything was, he was blind and it wasn't working out, and then all of a sudden he started singing, and there's a moment where suddenly you hear his voice, and he hears his voice and says, there's a break in the momentum of his life where suddenly you go, oh, that's what this picture is. And I've always wanted people, when they have their dreams, to hold out for that moment, because it comes. Eventually it comes. It may take a long time, but eventually it comes where people like yourself say, this really affected me. I watched it twice. That's why it means so much to me when I hear people say that, because I knew what we had done. Those things we were talking about, holding on to your dreams, loss of loved ones, were going to affect people. If we did it the right way, if we did it in an entertaining way.
Yeah, because you touch in much the same way that It's a Wonderful Life often touches people in that really deep place inside of you. That's what Do You Want to Dance does for you, and there just are a lot of beautiful moments. And I'm sure, Bob, that you in your life, you had to have that, you know, that same, there's a time to dream and a time to face reality that the character says in the, you know, in the movie. I'm sure you had those because the in-laws were the ones saying that to you or whatever. Like,
you know,
hey,
the funny, here's the funny part. When I wrote that, I was on top of the world. When I wrote that part of the screenplay, and I remember thinking, how am I gonna act this? Because I don't know that I can quite relate to this. By the time I got to say those lines, I was living it.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
you know.
I mean,
your
I
voice,
wish it was the other way around.
Acting. Yeah,
yeah. I remember, and it came flying out of my pores that day when I can see it even now when I look at the movie, and I can see when I remember kind of saying the lines, and then all of a sudden looking at the guy, Bobby Costanzo, who was playing the priest, and saying, "There's a time you have to face reality." And it was coming through my body at that moment. I just meant, like, are we gonna, can we really live out our dreams, or do we have to move on? One of the other things I touched on in the movie is the scene with the girl about three quarters of the way through, when she says that she wants to be a sculptor, and I can't remember the exact dialogue now, but I remember saying, well, what if you don't do that? Well, then she became a doctor. And to me, I found it so painful that here's the litmus test for your life, if you ask me. If I was to ask anybody in your audience or anybody passing by here and said, what would you want to be in your life? How many people would say, what I'm doing right now, that's what I want to be? And how many people would say, you know, I'd rather be a manager of a car manufacturer, or I'd rather be a doctor, or whatever. And to me, the shame is, I hope that success to me is when you say, I would like to be doing what I'm doing. That to me is success.
Right.
So many people I meet say, I wish I was doing this, or I wish I was doing that. And that to me is, I hope you can get back to where your dream is, and that's what the movie's about.
Right, and that's a beautiful thing. And there are times in... The interesting thing is about that, those moments, like you were really living out at that moment, everybody around you is saying you're nuts, or you're just having, you know, all of these what appear to be failures or roadblocks, stumbling blocks, whatever. When you look at, and you being in the film industry may be quite familiar with The Hero's Journey, the work that Joseph Campbell, the noted mythologist, did, where he talks about there is a particular path that people follow, and it's something that I actually teach in the work that I do, and by the way, I meet your definition of success because I do love what I want to be doing exactly what I'm doing. It's just so cool. And there are just sometimes, sitting at dinner with people last night, eating this chocolate-covered cannoli, going, oh, God, I love that. It's so good. It wasn't just the cannoli was great, but it was the people. It was just living the dream. It was one of those moments I almost started crying, not because of the cannoli, but because it was just one of those, oh, this is so amazing to be living
That's
this
great.
Kind of life. It's just really great, you know, yeah. And I want that for everybody who wants that. And what The Hero's Journey says to people is that there is a point at which the emerging hero feels this sense of dissatisfaction with life. You know, in other words, I want to be here, I'm somewhere different, I'm going to make those two come together. So they start to quest, they start to look for an answer, look for a way to get from where they are to where they want to be, one way or another. Along that road, they go through what Joseph Campbell calls the road of trials, all these trials and tribulations, all these different things. You go, you find out your wife's pregnant, and oh my gosh, not only is she pregnant, she's about to have triplets, and, you know, we're still trying to get this film going, and the in-laws are saying, you're nuts, you're not taking care of our daughter, and whatever, and all this other stuff, and you're feeling doubts, and whatever. That's all part of the road of trials, and the interesting thing that happens to the one that goes from being the potential hero to the true hero who gets to the end, is there is this moment that just is like what's often called the dark night of the soul, or a moment when it just feels like nothing is going to work out. It is so bleak and black, and you just, I don't know how this is going to happen. And really, the how is not any of our business. The how is often the thing that will surprise us, because we don't know how, it just somehow things work out. But eventually, through that black night of the soul, through that, oh, how is this going to happen? This feels impossible. And then something shifts, and from that is where you get that, yes, that conclusion of the quest. And that's
beautiful.
The quest.
That's beautiful. You know, it's interesting. The book I wrote, Falling in Love with Sophia, that's essentially what that book is about, because what it talks about is that through so much of the path of that book, there's so much disorientation where things you look at and you go, how is this ever going to add up? How is this ever going to connect? And then when you look at the very end, when you look back, you see that everything has been connected and was connected all along. It's just it didn't feel like it. And in my particular case, that just to me is God at work. I just believe that. I some people, you know, have different beliefs, but that my personal is that I just think, in looking back over my life, and I look back and I see where God has connected so many things that I go. To give you an example, I reference in the book, in Falling in Love with Sophia, the book had started out to be a movie, which we ultimately wanted to become. And one day my wife said, we were having trouble raising the money for the movie, and my wife said, you know, make it into a book, let it try and get it to be a bestseller, and then maybe someone will come along and help you finance the film. So I said, that's a great idea. So I started writing the book, and one day when I was shaving, ready to take the kids to school, I started thinking about an incident that happened at a church camp 30 years ago to me. And I got in the car, and I thought, God, what in the world made me think of that? And so I told my kids as we're driving to school, I said, hey, guys, you know, what do you think about this? And they tend to generally think that any idea I come up with stinks. But on this particular day,
because
they were
quiet.
Because
you're the dad, and that's right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So they on this particular day, they were like, all right, tell us. And I started telling them about an incident. And as I was at this camp, we were in the middle of it, and I heard this loud clang. And suddenly we ran up, and this kid had lost his arm. And he wasn't one of the campers. He worked there. And what happened was and this is the strange part about this is where, I mean, God connecting dots. I was a teenager at the time, and somewhere along the line, my mother told me, if anyone ever loses a limb, put it in salt water. And I remember yelling that to Mr. Cannabis. He ran back in the kitchen. He had the arm wrapped in a towel, and he just took all the salt, threw it in a bucket, and what happened was the gentleman who lost arm was already on his way to the hospital. They then took the arm to the hospital. All of us kids went to the chapel and were praying. And I was of an age where I still believe whatever you ask God, it's going to happen. And, and later that night, the priest came back in and said they weren't able to connect his arm. And he said, we're going to have to pray for him to now learn to cope with that arm. And I remember just going, are you kidding me? Like, God, who rose people from the dead, can't give him his,
right.
You know? And I remember what he said. He said, no is an answer. Now, I'm going to spoil part of the book for you here, but this is what, just to connect everything for you, one of the last things I say in the book is, when I went home from camp that summer, it just happened, I'm Greek Orthodox, so I go to Greek church and so forth, I was dating a girl who wasn't Greek, and she said, well, let's go to this Bible study. This was the one and only time I went to this Bible study, and you know what, I can't really remember the girl I went with, so this shows you how something was planted in my mind 30 plus years ago. Went to this Bible study, and as we were sitting there, people would say, this is who I am, this is who I am, and there was a guy who looked like he had a football accident or something, and we were going around, and everyone, he said, oh, I was in an accident this summer, and he was talking and talking, and all of a sudden, as he kept talking about how his arm had gotten banged up, I realized it was the guy. And I got up, and I went over, and I looked, and there was his arm attached. I mean, a huge cast and everything. And I was so stunned by it. And this is how I start to wrap up the book. In the end, what I believed, and this is what part of what the book was about, was these things, this incident that happened, how it was planted in my mind, me even telling it to you today, somebody out there hearing it about faith, something's orchestrated this. This doesn't just kind of fly by night and happen. I think it has tremendous, and that's what I believe in the end, when you look back on your life, I think all these dots connect and you go, oh, man, that's the picture. I get it. But it takes a while to get there sometimes.
You're right, Bob. It really does. And what's really funny is I'm also a fiction writer, and that's one of my ultimate things to do. When I can write fiction, oh, I just love it, because of the fact that just like you with your book and with your movies, you can direct things through a story that just can have a profound effect on people. And that's the part, yeah, I love writing a story, but it's because of that. And the funny thing is, in fiction, everybody expects that you're going to connect all the dots by the end of the whatever, book, story, movie, whatever it is.
Right.
They kind of expect that, and yet in life they say, well, life doesn't work that way. This is fiction. Fiction is supposed to work that way, but life just doesn't. And it's like, well, yes, and accept that it really kind of does, but it's just when you're in the middle of it, just like in the middle of a story, the characters don't know how it's going to work out.
Right.
And in the movie, the characters don't know how it's going to work out. You know, the guy thinks he's going to lose the girl. The guy is almost going to give up on his dreams. All those kind of things go on. And yet, that's really kind of how things often go. It's just that when you're down in it, you can't be getting that aerial view that shows you how those dots are going to connect.
Yeah,
so it's really fun to look in your life, a great exercise to do to help you realize how connected it all is. It's to truly look for those moments of connection between seemingly unrelated types of things or interesting little synchronicities that happen. Here is a case in point. I had the most profoundly cool experience this morning. I was at breakfast with some of the people at this seminar. We're done with the seminar, but they're still sort of hanging out. I used an image on the cover of my best-selling, number one best-selling book, The Peace Seed. And I found this image that was so profound, I actually cried when I saw it, and I went, yes, this is my cover, I know it, and I loved it.
Right,
I've
had that moment,
I thought, right.
Right,
it was that moment, it was so profound, and I did it, you know, the right way, I bought the rights to use it and everything, so it was great. So I go down there, and someone goes, oh, that's the image I have on my laptop. I'm like, you know, and I'm like, you're kidding. Mm-hmm. This is the image literally in the middle of the screen, and he said, yeah, it was at this Journey to Entrepreneurial Enlightenment or something. The name is similar to that anyway. It's a Nitro event. He goes, yeah, I was at Journey, and they had this, is the vision that was given to me, and I found the image that matched the vision, and I went, oh, my gosh. That was the image, the type of image I was looking for the cover. I went and found it. A guy in Germany took the picture, at least where I got it from. And then somebody else said, oh, they had that image somewhere else too, and none of us had known each other until this weekend. I hadn't met them. I knew of one of them, but I had never met any of them until this weekend. And I said, so what went to the Jeffrey that had it on his screen? I said, well, so what was it like when, because he bought my book when I accidentally kind of became a bestseller, which is another synchronicity. But I said, so what did you do when you saw that my cover had your image? And he said, oh, I flipped out. He said, that was just amazing. So those things happen. It's just connecting the dots. And for you, you know, you're connecting the dots in your story. And let people know how we can pick up the book. And I will look and see. I didn't see an Amazon link for it when I looked last time in the
it
console.
It is. It's actually, it's on Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And if you just go to Falling in Love with Sophia, if you punch that, type that in. And Sophia's S-O-P-H-I-A.
H-I-A. And I will get it in show notes after, you know, today as well. So, yeah, just look for that on Amazon. And you were doing a campaign this week for it.
Thursday. It's starting right now. We're starting to send out thousands of emails. And Thursday is the big day. We're going to try and, you know, in our dream world, this will be a great thing to see for your audience to see as well, is sometimes you hear dreams and you hear it at the end or, you know, as the dream, you're looking back. This one, you're hearing it right in stride. So your audience will get to see. What we're trying to do is we're trying to get it to be a bestseller on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and even the New York Times bestseller list. And this is the week they're looking to see how our sales are. And so it'll be interesting to see. Right now we're in the top 35,000 on Amazon. And it's
been
there.
Well, that's really remarkable. And are you in any categories, high in any categories yet?
You know what? That's a good question. I was kind of
haven't looked yet. That's okay.
I should know that answer, shouldn't I?
I should go punch it up on Amazon. But I'm running without my speech program working for me while I do the show, so it's a little harder for me to look up things on websites, but I'm sure that you're getting high. And here's what's funny. Now, I'll just let you know, Bob, that I hold the vision, now that I for sure know that I figured you wanted New York Times, but I hold that vision for you of seeing you getting the bestseller list on all three. And holding a vision for somebody else, we teach that all the time on our show and in our coaching and mentoring programs and everything, it's a lot of times it's so helpful when people come together and say, listen, this is my vision, this is where I'm going. And when other people come together and all focus on that with you, things happen. And a vision, having a vision, having that dream is really powerful. And how I got to bestseller with PSEED is kind of a funny story. And when I told Judy O'Baron from Passmark Services, who's conducting your campaign, she got wigged out because I said, oh, what did you do this week? And, oh, I just became the #1 best-selling author of a book, and I didn't even do a campaign. And she's kind of like, well, what? You're kidding me. That just does not happen. That just does not happen. And I said, well, you know, I saw that I was close because I was just by a freak of, if you will, I don't believe in coincidence, but it was just one of those, oh, I should go and grab a short link to that and actually save it into a file so I can just go and grab it anytime. I go there and I go, my goodness, I'm like 19 in one category, 45 in another. Well, that means #10 and 1 to 10 is bestseller. I'm so close. It would be a real shame to waste this wave. So I send out a few emails and tweets and, you know, I'll call a couple of friends and whatever. And then on my mom's birthday, I hit bestseller, which was the 30th of October.
Awesome.
Next day, I hit the #1. So, yeah, it was awesome. But to me, it's like, yes, I mean, that was great. And the best, the credibility that comes with it is phenomenal, et cetera. But to me, the best story in all of that was the power of a vision. Because my vision is that book is #1 bestseller. And I have other pieces of that vision that it sells a million books and other kinds of things because it's also raising money for a peace organization. And so, you know, and so anyway, just this, that piece of the vision having unfolded, quote unquote, by accident, haha, we don't believe in accidents, but, you know, having unfolded that way is just such a powerful story about that. Just holding that space for it to happen and being able to walk gently into it. Even though you are campaigning, you can walk more gently into the New York Times thing because you can just envision this is all happening, all the pieces come together, and it's just kind of funny, but how they will do that.
It's going to be a really interesting, because I know one thing that we didn't anticipate happening, we thought we were going to be much, much, much lower on Amazon to start out with, and we thought we'd have to this long trek up, but we began the week at 32,000, and if you read the testimonials, we haven't been able to post all of them, but we've gotten hundreds of them. They're so emotional what people have written me. I mean, if I had to sum them up, it usually goes something like this: I laughed, I cried, I couldn't put it down. And I can't wait to tell somebody about this book. That's basically what we've gotten from the book. And I think that ultimately it'd be interesting to look back on this conversation, I don't know, 6 months, a year, 2 years from now. I think where the destiny of this book is to become a movie. And I've, I don't know the how, when, why, or how it's all going to come about, but I do feel that. I feel like there's this, it's touched so many people that I feel like it's going to gain a momentum of its own. And how it's going to happen and when it's going to happen, I don't know. But I think that seems to me the direction we're headed. And I hope that more people become aware of it because I think that'll kind of push it in that direction.
Right. And the thing is that you don't have to know the how, because so often we don't, or the how that we think is going
to
happen.
Oh, we all want to, though.
Right. Well, I know. It's so funny. I remember us talking to all kinds of people that I don't know how to, blah, blah. Hey, listen, the how can be figured out. The how is something, you find a solution, you just ask somebody who knows, or you find a tutorial, or you hold the space, you know this will happen, or whatever. In your case, you're not going to find a tutorial, but, you know. So you just holding the space is a big deal, and holding that vision. It's amazing how those things happen, and because you're walking into the vision instead of trying to orchestrate the journey along the way.
Right, which a lot of people like to do.
Yeah, it really is. Right. Yeah, they do. So the book is Falling in Love with Sophia. You can find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, whichever you prefer to shop at, you will find it. I know I'm certainly placing my order. I'll be home this evening, and I will be ordering one ahead of the launch because that kind of momentum is often good. And
it's also,
I think part of why my book hit bestseller is I support a lot of authors' launches. I mean, people send me books all the time because of being a radio host and because of what I do, but I, a lot of times, will still buy it because I want to support the author's dream.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, have that, you know, to have that book. So I think it's one of those, I kind of feel like, oh, maybe a little karma came back and said, oh, well, here, we'll help you make that little journey.
For right.
This book is so important, you know. So falling in love with Sophia.
Now, will you send me an email after you've read it?
Oh, are you kidding? Yeah. You know what? If you're able to, on the Amazon page, I would put what testimonials you can and then put a link to say to read more. Responses go to, and then you can post them all.
Can you do that? Can you have a link that does that?
It may not. It won't be an active link, but people will. If you say www whatever, they'll figure it out. They'll get it.
That'd probably be cool.
Won't be an active link. Yeah, I should say I don't know for sure if it will be active, but when someone sees that, they'll be able to type it in. So that might be a cool way to get those testimonials.
Oh, you know, I think if you put it on the author's page, that's what they told me.
You put it on your authorcentral.com if you have a page on authorcentral.com.
Right.
Which is your author's page. And again, it won't on those, it won't be a live link, but it'll still be there. So that's
one
way for sure that you can do it, and you know that'll be a good thing. So that this way people will be able to find the rest of them. And I hope you have a fan page for the book.
We gotta get that. It's one of those things I always worry about the meat and potatoes, but then you think, okay, I gotta get the fan page, I gotta get this other stuff, and sometimes I'm not the most technically advanced guy, but I see that, you know, those things all help out a lot. So
well, one of the people that we had dinner with last night, who's very successful in his own business, he's Devon Brown, it's his name. He calls himself the Success Renegade. Partly why he calls himself the Success Renegade is someone will say, oh, I saw your product that does blah, blah, blah. How do you do such and so on WordPress? Like, I don't know. I hire someone to do that. I have no idea. And I don't really care. You know, you don't have to know how to do everything. You just have to, you know, he says, I just can do this the stupid way, you know, whatever. He's not. He's a very brilliant person, but he's not all tied up in exactly how everything has to be done. As long as he can find someone, and he says his biggest secret is, he says, he knows exactly the outcome. So he says, if I write a description and I say, I need a whatever to do A, B, and C in this way or in this amount of time or with whatever, and he'll put out a bid, find somebody who can do that and make it happen that way. Because he knows what he wants. He knows the end, the vision, the destination. And he just finds someone else who can get the house for him.
Right.
And that's a
really
powerful concept for a lot of everybody, no matter what. You don't have to know all the how.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
So
well, all right. Go ahead.
Oh, I was wanting to say the movie, Do You Want to Dance? I want to mention one other thing about that. It's kind of cool because you have these two awesome things happening right around the same time. So people can still order Do You Want to Dance and are encouraged to. I just love it. And like I say, I'm going to be ordering some for gifts because I love to share those messages that are uplifting.
One thing
I love about it is the power that one person has when they're following their dreams and their passion to really open up the lives of people around them in the community to be able to do the same.
Well, also what we're trying to show is that, and then also the power that one person can have when they stop. In this case, it was the priest, Father Chris, when they stop and help. And they stop what they're doing and in turn actually help one person, the power of that.
And it was that one person that helped the character that you played get back on the path of getting to his dream. And both of those characters had such huge impact. And I had a good time even watching the little bits of auditions and things like that.
Yeah.
He having these roles were great. The guy who's doing the priest, oh my heavens. I mean, I was like, man, the hype was just so perfect for what he was doing. And I'm from Chicago, and my dad is like that.
Yeah, I could hear that. I could hear the accent. I could hear a little Chicago accent there. That's great.
I live in Missouri now, but that's where I'm from. So, yeah. And we're Italian families, and Italians and Greeks run kind of similarly, you know.
Right.
Very, big monster.
Oh, that's
that
great.
Very your face is fun. So, yeah, and it's been fun. I know you have to leave us, but I am very grateful to have you on Relationship Marketing 101. So just a huge thank you to you. And be sure to pick up Falling in Love with Sophia from either Barnes & Noble or Amazon, or whichever is your favorite. Keep watching for it on the bestseller, New York Times bestseller list. And Do You Want to Dance? You can get that at asktsl.com/dance. And it is great, great dancing. It's like the Footloose for the 21st century, and it's just a beautiful
That's
story.
Cool.
I love that.
That's cool. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much, Bob. And you take care, and just hang on, because we are continuing on with Relationship Marketing 101. So thanks, Bob.
God bless. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Yes. All right. So, very cool ideas that you can take from this movie. First of all, I hope that you will go ahead and decide to bring it home, because it will definitely inspire you. I watched it twice the day that I got it. I watched it with Stinson, of course, as well, because I love things that inspire. And anytime you feel a little down on yourself, or you go, gosh, is this stuff ever going to work out? Will I ever make it to my dreams and everything? You will have that to remind you that, yes, great things can happen. And it's something you can feel safe about, letting your children, their friends, whatever, everybody over to watch without having to cover their ears or cringe or anything of that nature as well. So that is truly helpful. In terms of the power of relationships, you were hearing in what Bob was telling you just how powerful it is when you have that dream and when you then decide to put everything on the line and to be able to go for it. It is not easy, no. There are times when you just kind of wonder, what am I doing? Have I lost my mind? When people around you probably will say something very similar to that to you. You know, what possessed you to think you could, blah, blah, blah. And yet, by surrounding yourself with tremendous positivity and great people, great information, great resources, that you really can get to where you want and need to be in your life and in your business. Nobody is walking that journey alone. Nobody is walking that journey alone. So even though that you may think that you are sometimes, or it may feel that you are sometimes, but it's not something that you're doing alone, because you have other people around you. And one of the great things that happened for the main character in Wanna Dance was that he got himself around just one person in the beginning who really decided to put it all out on the line and believe in him. Yeah, there were naysayers around him, absolutely. You can't always totally avoid the naysayers, but doing whatever you can to keep the negativity out of your life will help you in tremendous ways. It really will. So I know that as a blind person, it's kind of funny, because there are a lot of people, I've had people who are religious and come up to me and they decide that they want to pray for my eyes to be healed, which is fine. I mean, all prayer is lovely, and that's very sweet, but it's kind of funny, because sometimes the response is, if I didn't just miraculously go, oh, I can see, and everything was great, but somehow I did not have sufficient faith in their eye. And I just find that very, very funny, because I say, well, you know, that may be your concept, and I'm not going to be in conflict with you about that, you know, whatever, but I will say that perhaps why I'm still the way I am is because I meant to show you that you don't have to be physically perfect to do amazing things in your life. I've got Mike Evans in the hotel room packing and applauding me. I love it. So, yes, it's really true that there are many ways to define anything, success, to define being healed, whatever. And what you hold to is your way of feeling and living and being in that place of what is for you success and what is for you living your dream. So that is, that's a powerful message for everybody. In Do You Want to Dance, you'll find that, yes, there are those people around, just like you have in your life, who, hey, this person's from the wrong side of the tracks, what are you doing, having someone like this hanging around. And yet there is this one person in this piece, the character of the priest, who's able to see beyond that, see into the capability of success that's available. So I'm making a transition to leave the hotel room that I'm in. So if you hear some odd noises, if you'll just please bear with me for just a minute or two, because I'm almost out of here. I had to leave right at this time, right in the middle of the radio show. That was as much of an extension as I can get. So if you'll just pardon me for a little bit of shifting and shuffling, we'll be on our way. We're leaving right now. So, and the other guests will be out in a minute. I'm leaving right now. Sorry about that. Like I say, little transition. So this is the talk about the roving radio report. I'm going to be going from the hotel room out into the hallway so that they can get this room ready for their next guest. In terms of thinking about the relationship marketing aspect and truly building through the power of relationships, you heard Mike talking about that in a lot of ways. Certainly the movie is a great example of relationship building in life, and also in business in that case even. In terms of building relationships with people, that is really what's going to get you to that place of living the dream that you have. You're never, ever, no one is a solo. No one is ever going to do it alone. Hang on 1 second. I am getting out the door now. Hey, Molly Flagtail. And where do we go down the hall? So, I'm out of the room now. This is the in radio in motion. In terms of his new book, which I'm very excited to read, Falling in Love with Sophia, any time that you are getting a message out about what you do, you're going to need to use different methods. In this case, he is doing what is called a book launch, which is much like if you've heard of a product launch or a book launch. When you gather together partners who support the message, the book, the product, whatever it is, and all agree to send messages out on a given day. And when I reached out to Bob Krantz and saying that I would love to have him as the guest, at that time I did not know the book was even coming out. So imagine how cool and exciting it was to be able to find out that, wow, he was launching in mid-November, which was around the only time we had show slots available, was right around this time. And I said, well, how perfect. That means just a couple of days before your launch, now you're going to have some more links, some more activity. And he was able to come and talk to us at least for an hour today. Of course, he is right in the middle of doing all kinds of things for his book launch right now. So in all of this orchestration of partners, it is very fun to have people, and some of them are just people who go, yeah, book launch, it sounds cool, I'll mail, whatever. But some of those people are really committed to the message that he brings out. And I know if his movie is any indication, I'm sure his book is just equally as inspiring. Because the same thing that he said people were saying about the movie, where it was that they laughed, they cried, they loved it, and they couldn't wait to tell somebody else, I could say the exact same thing for the movie, Do You Want to Dance? it was exactly that same type of thing. Like I said, I had the Kleenex box. I laughed. I loved it. Yeah, shed a few tears, and was very excited to see it and to be able to share that message. That's just a really powerful thing when you have an ability to create a book or a tool that does that. So it's really fun. So if you want to see Do You Want to Dance, you can check out the trailers and reviews and different things. It's been very highly reviewed all over the place. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's not the reviews from the Chicago Tribune and WGN, the news television station. But what matters in the end are what the people have to say. So it's quite exciting to share that with you. That is over at asktsl.com/dance. And his book is, you will see a link appearing to the on the show page. And so you can find Falling in Love with Sophia on Amazon or on barnesandnoble.com. And so now I'm going to transition to a couple of other things. Thank you. Catching an elevator. Thank you so much. There we go. Hopefully this will stay connected while I'm going down. The event that we were at this weekend, the events that we go to all the time, the things that we do in business, meaning myself and Gina, that are all about the power of building your business, following and living your dream through the power of the internet. It's amazing to get together with people in all different places. There's some interesting observations that I have from various people and from various situations that have gone on during the time. So let me try to be somewhere quieter. If I can. I'm in a lobby now, so it's a little challenging. So, scarcity mindset versus abundance mindset. Something that I notice in a lot of ways showing through. Last night I was in a restaurant with a whole bunch of people. It was a networking dinner. Mom, stop it. It was a networking group of people who were there specifically to meet and get acquainted. And yes, to eat dinner, but also to get acquainted. My take on a networking dinner is that you have the time and the space to visit with people, so there's no particular rush. Apparently a couple of people had quit, and so they were short staffed, even though we had made the arrangements in advance to have a room, and they knew how many were coming and so forth, so they ended up being short staffed. Well, some people, interestingly, have this scarcity mindset of, well, didn't they know we were coming? Why didn't they have enough people? And I said, well, they did know. I don't know quite what was happening at the time. I just know a couple of people had quit and had things go on. But I said, you know what? We're here to get to know each other. We're here to relax. We're probably going to be here for 2.5-3 hours anyway. So what's the difference if your food arrives this exact second or, you know, maybe a little bit later than usual? We were served. We had salads with dinner, and there was bread available, so there was something. If someone had a desperate need for some kind of food that minute, they could have something at least. So that scarcity mindset was really interesting, and I was trying to encourage the staff, you know, don't worry so much. I know. I said, I'm sure some people are a little growly about it or whatever, but I said, you know, it's just really not that big of a deal. It's just really not that big of a thing. And they can chill. So I said, don't make that upset you or throw you off. And, of course, those of us with an abundance mindset who knew we were going to be there for 3 hours or so anyway, because we're going to be talking to people that we hadn't seen, making new acquaintances, helping some folks out, you know, maybe doing even a little wheeling and dealing. We were not in a rush. So it's just an interesting perspective shift that you can make. You know, if you find yourself feeling rushed or you find yourself feeling a sense of scarcity, is there any good reason for it, and is it serving you? So ask yourself that question and realize that oftentimes, even if things are not optimal, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to fly off the handle and be awful about it. I've had some pretty rotten hotel experiences this past week. And yet, when I would talk with management about it, it was no different from the way that I would talk to anyone else in a very calm and conversational tone. And yet, one time I walked by, and there was this business owner just pitching a fit about something about his receipt. He just didn't quite please him. It just wasn't quite the right way. So that's just how it is sometimes. But in any case, that's just how it is. So I thought, well, how much more fun and interesting to stay in a good place, even though I'm unhappy about some things. And yes, I've even written blog posts about some of these things that have gone on. There is a bigger lesson and a bigger sense of what happened. I am, of course, an author of a peace book, so I am quite aware of doing everything I can to be a presence of peace, even when there is conflict, because there will always be. Peace doesn't mean just floating around in the sense of bliss constantly. It also means dealing with the practical issues and conflicts and things that typically come up in any given day. So you really can come to things from a place of abundance, even when your things aren't quite going entirely your way. You can come at everything in life from a place of openness and communication versus strife and versus carrying on and getting all upset and frustrated and ruining your own day. It really is possible to be in a different way from either the way that you see other people acting or perhaps in the way that you yourself might find yourself feeling and acting at times. So look for that differences around scarcity versus abundance. I was really quite shocked. You know, I live in the country these days and have for 6 years, and it's a very pleasant place out in the country. And what's really neat about that area around Branson, Missouri, is people are very friendly. And people in the grocery stores or in just whatever, they'll just talk to you just to be nice. Not trying to sell you something, it's just how people are. They're very friendly and very open. Now I'm in Atlanta, and it's a big city, and I haven't been in a big city much over the last 6 years. So one of the things I found kind of shocking to me, just because I haven't been around anything like that in quite a long time, was that I went to a little gas station convenience store, and they had this bulletproof glass, and which that in itself didn't surprise me, but the area where you could actually reach through to the other side was so small it was like you could just put your fingers through enough to slide the money over and to receive your change, and then the guy would hand you a bag if you needed a bag through this little tiny slot that was maybe an inch and a half high. My first thought was how terribly sad that we live in such a time and in such an era that those types of things seem to be necessary. And it is possible to hold the vision that it can be different. And for the vision that things can be different to come into fruition, it's about enough people shifting into a different place and doing everything possible to move their little piece of the world, your little piece of the world, into that direction and that space where things can be peaceful and can be pleasant and can be uplifting. Kind of interesting here because it's been gray and raining all day, and several of us are leaving on airplanes this afternoon, and I said I would like it to be at least somewhat sunny and not raining such that the airplanes can get off on time. Whether that will come to fruition, I don't know about the airplane being on time part, but I do know for sure that the sun has just come out. And how lovely that we now have a sunny afternoon. So that's going to help make it a little bit easier to fly and get out on my way and get back to my chickens and my cats and my little home out there in the country that I love so very much. you can hold that vision for what you want your life to be, move yourself toward it, move through the times that are not optimal, even have pretty amazing seeming coincidences happen to you, such that you start to go, oh my goodness, look at all of these things that shouldn't have happened that are so stunningly amazing that they would coincide and have those things come together. It definitely can happen for you. And I'm sorry that Gina hasn't been with us. However, she, of course, you know, sends all of her awesome thoughts and wishes. She is with some students helping to serve them and make things happen, and it's just the timing of traveling and different things. Sometimes that's how things go sometimes. So, but she is definitely with us in spirit and is really excited. Well, really wanted to meet Bob. I know she'll be disappointed that she couldn't quite manage to pop in. I know that had been her intention. So she is on her way back to where she is staying currently in Indiana, and they're still dealing with motorhome issues and so forth, but she is so grateful and excited to have a wonderful place to stay among her students, a couple of her students that live up there. And again, this weekend, you know, talk about coincidences. She found several people that she had never met or known of before who live, one of them lives a couple of blocks away. Now she knows them, so they'll be able to be together. And I think about three people, and this was out of a group of about 60 people. So there's about three of them who live within a reasonably short distance, you know, maybe within 90 miles or less of where she is, and so can actually have an easier chance of getting together with her while she's up there in Indiana dealing with the motorhome issue. So that's all the kind of things that are going on in her life at the moment. And I'm getting ready to go back, as I said, to Branson, and you'll notice you didn't hear a rooster on the show. I know that I've missed him, but I'm nowhere near my roosters right now. So, well, maybe he'll sing out twice next week for you, since we didn't get to hear him on the show this week. Almost every time you get to hear roosters and sometimes chickens as they make their presence known. And now in Atlanta, boy, there's lots of traffic, and we didn't hear a siren, thank goodness, but all kinds of different things happening. So I am going to close us out a few minutes early because of the fact of needing to get a shuttle and get to the airport. So with my apologies for leaving you early, but I'm very excited to have been able to share Bob Krantz with you and also to be able to share some thoughts around holding a vision and around moving towards that vision and towards your dream. And of holding that space for great things to happen. So make it a fantastic week. I'm sorry, no closing music this week. I had to shut my computer down. But I want you to join us again next week for another fabulous show on Relationship Marketing 101, where each week we show you how to build your business through the power of relationships. So this has been Rhonda Del Baccio, the Story Lady of ProfitableStorytelling.com, your co-host, along with our missing Gina Gaudio Graves, Dean and Founder of Directions University and the JV University. I've been calling her Queen of the Road, although she's grounded at the moment because of the motorhome issues. So thank you for listening, and we will be back next week.